Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Chad Haas from the Android Toolkit team. And today we have
Isaac Atzenelson, the tech lead for the Android Home UI.
And Virgil Lubjansky, I'm the TLM for the Android TV team.
So the Home UI is a subset of the overall thing. Maybe that's a good place to start. So we're talking about Android TV. Can we understand the big picture of like what that product is?
Yes, sure. Think of Android TV. The best way probably to describe Android TV is just to compare it with the way we build the Android mobile platform. In many respects, Android TV is similar to mobile. We use the same kernel, very low level, the structure of the drivers, the kernel. We use the framework exactly as it was built for mobile. There are very small changes to framework that are very specific to TV. And then we have the application layer. And that's where the differences between TV and mobile come in. And I can talk a little bit more about that.
Sure.
So Android TV applications are actually optimized for the landscape form factor and the use of the device with a remote control. So the entire experience is optimized so you can actually navigate easily the interface by simply using a remote control with a D-pad and a few more buttons. For that, we came up with a, let's say, application model that's based on fragments and activities, all the things you already know from the structure of a mobile application. But the UX is designed in such a way that you can easily get to content, navigate with the D-pad, navigate with a menu on the left side to go to settings and structure your content maybe in a different way so you can easily get to it. And that's it.
So the system UI is different than on a mobile device.
Yes, it is. Although, to be clear, it's built with the same concepts that you find on mobile. So everything you know from mobile, be that services, fragments, activities, layouts, apply 100% to TV the same way you would actually use them on mobile. It's just the way they look are different. And obviously you have to think that users watch their displays from maybe 6 to 10 feet away. So the size of fonts has to be a little bit different and so forth.
So you want the UI on the TV to be fairly consistent so the experience is consistent for the user, right? So this does this also change the application model if you are writing an application for Android TV?
Yeah, let's clarify.
Sure.
Let's think, how would you build an application for TV? And we don't dictate a way to developer. There are several ways to do it. One, the way we prefer is that you use the so-called Leanback library, which is distributed with the support library, basically, from Android TV, from Android, where we give you a set of fragments. We give you a nice model of how you can build an application in a manner that's consistent with the UX guidelines that our design team put forth. That's number one. Number two, you can actually build the TV applications without using this library and just using the activities, the fragments, services in a way that you think you build the best application you can build. In other words, we just help you with our Leanback library, but you don't have to use it. The third way, which some of our large app developers use, is to use HTML. So to actually build your app. And
so just a big web view in the middle of the content?
Something like that. I think HTML frameworks have gotten better over time and they are more responsive. They are not the memory hogs that used to be, although in some cases we're still seeing that being the case. And by the way, every company develops their own HTML framework. So we've seen that.
Every developer.
Yeah.
Every developer. They all think that they have the best one. And by the way, there's a very, very important reason why they do that. They want to make sure that their content can be accessed easily on all kinds of devices, be that PlayStation or Xbox, Android TV, and so forth. So it's much easier for them to develop this kind of framework and deploy the same app, obviously with the same content, on all these devices.
Right. So I want to take it back to something you said earlier. You said, we used the entire framework just as is, except for a couple of tiny things. What were those things? What changes did you make for TV?
Oh, wow. So I have to think of the most important one, and that is related to the input framework. Obviously, for Android TV, you're not using a touchscreen. You're not using a trackball to actually control your device. You're actually getting input events from a device that's remote. Typically, that's an IR remote, although lately most of the devices that implement Android TV would have a BLE remote. So what that means is that the key events, and I'm going to talk also about audio a little bit later, are sent from this remote, passed through the kernel, and serve as input events to the framework. Now, that's not a huge difference, but that is a very interesting distinction between Android TV and mobile.
Sure. Now, so, I mean, we've seen a similar thing as things like, Android applications running on Chromebooks necessitates that we receive key inputs as the main drivers instead of touch. Like Android and mobile devices are always built around touch. So if you're not touch, there are good chances that you're not getting the same or an optimal experience because the application developers weren't necessarily thinking about those kind of key events.
Right? That's right. But we did a good job, I think, in defining exactly what keys are important for TV. And I want to make sure I don't leave anything out, but we have the D-pad. Keep me honest here, Isaac. The home. The assistant key, which we should talk about.
You're saying home. Are you talking about the assistant where I can, like the Google Home where I say, hey, I want to watch Netflix, and then that drives, is that what you're talking about? You're talking about something else.
There was also just a home key for
there's
going
the home key, and there's also the media keys in some of the remotes. Right. If you play, pause, that's also possible to have on the remote.
Okay.
To clarify, nothing to do with the home product,
okay,
but rather taking me home to the screen, to the launcher.
I completely misunderstood. All right.
It's not home TM. It was just home.
No, because I have heard that you can talk to the assistant and it will drive Android TV. It'll, right?
Yes, and we should talk about that. That's
a different kind of input event.
By the way, on the remote, we provision one button, the assistant button, that you can use to actually voice input directly into the assistant. And get all the benefits of the assistant on TV. Absolutely true. We started to do that in Android O.
And I think, I was going to say briefly, my favorite feature of Android TV, you're probably going to laugh, but it is the fact that I can use a remote that isn't IR, one that is instant. Like it drives me crazy when I'm using my normal cable setup box with an IR remote. And it's just, there's some sort of lag with IR that just does not, you know, and I don't know if that's just because my battery's getting low or what the issue is, right? But I just felt like with Android TV, and the PlayStation, for that matter, it's much more reactive. The UI and the input events just seem to be immediate.
Do you watch TV in the same house as you're using the remote? That might be part of the problem. If you're a couple miles away, there's going to be latency.
Well, it might not be. So it might not be the IR tech. It might just be a completely terrible implementation in the cable box DVR. Yeah. But it's very sort of laggy. You know, you press a button and it's half a second. Which, you know, with Android TV, it was instant.
I would say that all devices that use IR tend to to be a little bit more sluggish.
Yeah.
You have to look at how IR is implemented. It actually needs to send those IR pulses for a little bit of time to make sure that it was is interpreted correctly on the other end. Whereas BLE, it works, you know, in the 2.4 gig spectrum. It's very fast. The latency is very low. So anyways,
it's an entire packet. So I'm thinking like a long press or a double click. You don't actually know it's that gesture until the end of the entire operation, right? So
That's right.
So the IR remote is sending a whole lot of more information that they have to wait for before they process it.
Yeah. You have to think about the modulation of how IR buttons are actually sent over and how long that has to be in order to avoid any kind of errors in transmission and so forth. That's not to say that you cannot build a fast IR. Maybe the kinds that you've been using haven't been so great.
Yeah, and actually, since we're just talking about TV in general, let me ask a different question. I remember a while ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, when you could channel surf with your remote. You could sort of go up and down quickly. On modern TVs, there's like a 2-second lag per channel. Like, that just isn't possible anymore. What happened?
What happened is we got into a digital channel, and digital channels take a little bit of time to switch
between digital channels. Why would
analog, by the way, you're referring actually to analog
channels,
which were very simple to switch. Yeah. It's instant,
instantaneous. Super gratifying.
Yes. Well, we need to buffer video in order to get a decent experience on playback. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
It also seems like they're serving up much more information. Like, and now they're going to show you what's actually happening on that channel. It's like, I just wanted to know what was
going on. What if, I know that, you know, certain image formats, and I think even Netflix does this with streaming, they start out in low resolution, and then as they realize, oh, we have a lot of bandwidth, what if I could channel surf quickly in basically old VGA mode, you know, 320 by whatever the vertical was, quickly. And then as I'm staying on the channel, okay, we start giving me more picture here. Anyway, that lag just drives me crazy. So since you're in the TV industry, feature request, fast channel switching. That actually leads me to my next question. I'm sorry, I'm just throwing more questions and not giving you a chance to answer. But the biggest thing that Android TV was missing for me was actual TV. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be Android apps on a TV. And what I often want to watch is actually TV. Mm-hmm. But I wanted something better than my DVR, which I don't know if I said it out loud, but I hate my DVR so much. And I like Android TV, but it doesn't do DVR. So is there any sort of integration with TV in Android TV now?
Well, yes, there are. The biggest the most important type of device for Android TV are smart TVs. So inherently, you have a tuner in your TV. And what you're doing is, because all the output from the TV can be rendered in Android TV, we have the so-called Live Channels app that can actually do that. It can either take the video produced by the TV decoder or the HDMI video and actually render it in Android TV.
I see. So if you buy a TV that has Android TV built in, then you will get this. Because I had the little round box that's like 3 years ago.
Now, still in, put an antenna in, connect an antenna, and we have the built-in live TV app that will actually pick it up and actually will get you the EPG and everything, and you can have the full experience of over-the-air TV. Oh.
I'd love the idea of having something as technologically advanced as Android TV and then adjusting the rabbit ears on top of it. I want to see that happen.
It actually works pretty well. And the quality of over-the-air transmissions are really, really good. They're really high quality.
Well, they're digital now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are digital and they're high quality.
And in fact, what Isaac is referring to is a USB tuner, and we supported two of them, that you can plug in actually in the back of the Nexus player, and you can surf channels, you can
switch. Oh, yeah, the Nexus player, that's the name of the round thing, right? That's what I have.
But actually any Android TV box can do that.
That has a USB input, you can actually. Now, it's best if an OEM decides, I'm going to make an OTT box. And this OTT box should not only over the top.
Uh-huh.
So it's the kind of box that you plug with an HDMI cable into your TV. Mm-hmm. Well, what if it has a tuner and an antenna and all that? That's all up to the OEM to decide. Is that the market I want to go after? Lots of OEMs decide not to and reserve that type of functionality for TVs. But I think in other countries, we may see similar products like this, especially in Europe, where watching live TV is still very popular.
It's because their content's really good. I think that's
and,
it.
And we, free.
Yeah, yeah. So but if we had better content here, then TV could become a thing.
Well, see, I don't love live TV because of all the commercials. And so what I really like is the ability to sort of watch it when I want to watch it and be able to skip, you know, in the content and so forth. Is there an app in Android TV for that, for managing recording and video streams, or is that the kind of thing that the
live TV also allows you to do DVR? But also, you have other options. You still have services running as an app on Android TV that will give you TV, like YouTube TV and other options. And they will give you actually cloud DVR, which is a really, really good solution. At least for me, I'm using it and it's a really good solution.
Wow. So it's sort of the functionality you're looking for. It's just that the TV signal is being received somewhere else and then it's streaming down to the app, right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
But you also have to think of the new wave of live TV streaming that is through services, something like YouTube TV.
Right.
Where this is interesting, where you can actually watch that still by streaming as opposed to having a tuner in your device.
Right.
That's a new wave of technology coming in the next few years.
Interesting. And then you're not beholden to the TV schedule either. You could just choose to watch that at any point, right? Because they must provide DVR services then in the cloud somewhere. Yeah. I don't even need to manage these things. I assume you have much more capabilities to watch.
It's still limited a little bit by licensing. So you DVR some program and you have it, you can watch for like 2 weeks later on, but not forever.
Yeah.
But it's pretty flexible and it's pretty good. Huh.
So the goal of Android TV is to enable OEMs to build products that cover all these needs that we just spoke about. Be that live TV, obviously streaming, or video inputs, for that matter, as well as DVR functionality.
So can you help us understand the devices that you have out there today, right? From the beginning. So at the start, there was this thing called...
There were many versions of Android TV, I think the most recent one was the one that had the player, right? The Nexus player.
Yeah, the Nexus player was sort of the reference device at the beginning, right? Or maybe there was an earlier one that was
ADT before that. Okay. But the main commercial one was the Nexus player.
Okay.
And when you're asking you mean Google?
I mean, what are the different ways that people today can watch through the Android TV product that we build, Android TV platform that we build?
OEMs build three categories of products with Android TV. One, still the largest category, smart TVs. So in this category, Sony, Sharp, Le Echo, Philips, they all have products that are Android TV enabled. Number two is the OTT solutions we were just talking about here. Nexus Player, for example, was in that category, because it's no longer on sale, I'm saying. And
so it's a collector's item.
It sure is. We bought a few on eBay. and then in this category, though, it's worth mentioning the NVIDIA Shield. It is the most powerful hardware that runs Android TV, period. We should maybe talk a little bit about the hardware that runs Android TV and how is that different than mobile. That's an interesting discussion. Xiaomi actually sells still at Walmart, if I'm not wrong, the Xiaomi Mi Box, and they're working on new versions of that product.
What is that? Is that like the Nexus player?
Very similar functionality, OTT. Yeah. It's an OTT. It's a small box you can... it's actually sub $70, if I...
$70, it's a 4K device. It's pretty fast.
So good way. Really nice. With phones, there's a lot of sort of carrier customization, whereas with Android Wear, you see less of that. Where does Android TV fit in terms of, you know, what you buy is going to vary widely based on who built it, or is it more sort of standardized?
But before you answer that, you had done two devices out of three, right?
Yes. The third category was set-top boxes. So last year or 2 years ago, we started seeing a lot of traction from operators. They're considering deploying set-top boxes that run Android TV. And that, in the future, I think it's going to be a very large category of OEM-type devices that are enabled by Android TV.
So you subscribe to a particular cable provider and the thing they bring into your home is an Android TV device.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Now, you mentioned hardware, and one of the things that I know made this project tricky in general is that things like set-top boxes, they will just nickel and dime the thing down to lowest performance, or at least historically. Like, you just get CPUs that can sort of barely do the job because their job was very limited historically.
Right. And they keep adding new software on there that makes it worse. So my set-top box is trying to do animations.
Ooh.
And it's just so annoying because it's just making everything take twice as long and it's not smooth.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were thinking when they rolled that update out. I actually had a service person come out for something else and ask, hey, where's the debug options for this thing where I can turn off animations, you know, like you can in Android? And no, Doesn't exist.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, it's a very significant challenge. If you think about how Android Mobile is built and what is it targeted for, is more and more powerful devices, right? I don't even keep track of what is the latest version of the Qualcomm chip, you know, the 840 or whatever it is. Anyways, it has probably more than 8 cores or about 8 cores, and it runs at really high frequencies. That is not the case for all the hardware that's used in the three categories that I spoke about, that smart TVs and OTTs and set-top boxes. There are exceptions from the rule. I just gave one earlier, talking about the NVIDIA Shield. It's a really powerful hardware. The reason, by the way, that why that is because they market their device for gaming as opposed to media streaming and any kind of other TV sort of watching habits.
So the games then are Android TV games, or like Android games in general that just happen to run because it's Android?
Yes, they are. I think they're optimized for that form factor. Again, they're not actual the mobile version of the game. Mm-hmm. But yes, there are games developed for Android TV. The differences, by the way, are fairly small, as they are the differences between mobile apps and TV apps.
So should app developers, if they have a mobile game, look into what it would take to sort of support D-pad as input? Is that kind of what it takes to make your app run well on Android TV, or is it more...
We also support game controllers.
Okay.
So you're not going to play game. I mean, some games you can easily play with a remote, although even the Nexus Player came with a game controller, which looks very similar to an Xbox game controller.
Actually, we talked to Tim years ago in a much earlier generation of Android TV about some of the stuff, the things you had to do, because you need to be advertised in the Play Store as TV enabled. So that's part of it. Like you need to have basic capabilities of input and tell the store that you're actually a TV app so that we know not to send out an application that's going to be horrible on the TV because it wasn't written for that form factor.
So this distinction between mobile and TV is handled by the Play Store. In fact, you have to publish a TV-specific application in order for that to be available on devices, on TV. Sorry, I want to get back to your earlier question.
Yes, hardware.
Yes. So the SoCs that you will find in the three categories that we spoke of are actually much lower end devices. So this is the number one challenge that we have, a framework that is built for phones, yet it has to run on these SoCs that are not so powerful. And you would think, oh, Lord, this is going to be very difficult. In fact, it's not. And we have the collaboration of the framework team to thank for that, because building the framework and the entire OS, because there are other things like play services and other things that come into play here, and targeting them for phone doesn't mean you can be sloppy when you program them. We always want, and the framework team always does a great job in making sure that they write the code in the best way they can. So in fact, it actually runs really well on these lower end devices. When it doesn't, for one reason or another, we go back to the team that actually implemented the feature and we say, number one, does this make sense on TV? Number two, it's slow. How can we optimize this? But generally speaking, this constitutes probably 1% of situations, which is fantastic. This is I would give a big round of applause to the framework team and other teams at Google, be that Play Services or stuff, and doing a great job in making sure that everything they write and actually applies to TV still runs really fast.
I think even on modern phones, even if the phone is fast enough, you're just burning a necessary battery, you know? So like we care about cycles today, even if the phone is fast enough.
Right. So actually it's interesting when you said, oh, and it just works. And I was remembering faces I've seen Chris Craik make because he needed to optimize things because we would hit these super low frequency CPUs for Android TV. But I think one of the reasons why it does work in general is we are using the same framework platform that was written for 1.0, right? All of the core stuff was shipping on the G1 in, 2008, right? So it's not like, when ART came online, we went and we rewrote everything internally to take advantage of a faster allocator and collector. That core code still exists. We are now building on top of it, but we try to keep things optimal. But we sort of had practices that went into the framework early on when, in fact, we didn't have great CPUs. And so I think you're benefiting to some extent from those foundations.
But I do want to go back to what Tor was saying. Hey, you know what? I'm running Android TV on some hardware, and the performance is not all that great. So we had feedback regarding some OEM hardware that wasn't doing a great job. And we are taking a very sort of broad look at this problem. And we're saying, look, what are the things that OEMs need to do in order to improve the performance of their software? And what is it that we can help them with to get there? So one of the things that we did in Android P, by the way, a new effort that we set up in Android P is around performance. So we actually have now a team dedicated to performance and product excellence that watches over the performance of, say, the three most popular devices that we have out there, which do not have this very powerful SoC CPU GPU combination. And we're constantly looking over what can we do to make sure that the number of frames that these devices can render get close to 60.
And just to be clear, the set-top box that I have and hate is not an Android TV. It's a standard box from a very popular cable provider in the US. Oh, I can't wait to replace it with something better. So in terms of hardware, I also have what is it called now? Is it a Google Cast? Chromecast, I'm not sure what the product name is, but basically one of these USB sticks you stick in the back of your TV, mm-hmm. and it does a pretty good job, actually, even with HDTV. How does that kind of hardware compare to Android TV? Would it be possible to miniaturize Android TV into something nearly that small that you could just stick into the back of are we talking much bigger requirements for CPU, disk, network, that kind of thing here?
The short answer is yes, you can. I can't go into the details of what kind of hardware is in there just because I'm not sure we're allowed to share. But I can tell you that the class of processor that is needed will actually run Android TV. And so with all the efforts that we undertook in Android P, we're fairly confident that not only with the SoC, but with a lower amount of RAM, which is always, by the way, very critical. The price of the device is usually dictated by the amount of RAM that it uses and less so by its SoC and to some extent by the amount of flash that it uses. So we're confident that we can, our OEMs or ourselves could create devices that actually are in the same class as the hardware used by Chromecast. Huh.
So you mentioned Android P. We had a conversation coming up to Google I/O about, looking around for content that we could talk about and what's new in Android to tell developers. And you said, well, TV, it's not really user visible stuff. And you said the team had been focused on, general, making things work better, right? So since we didn't talk about it in What's New in Android, maybe you could talk about that now, right? You have a sizable team working on this thing. What's been going on?
Great. So how about I'll talk about what's new on the platform and I'll let Isaac speak about the launcher application. Sure. Let's split that. So the number one thing we have done is to improve the overall quality and performance of the device. Now, a lot goes into it here, and you're going to say, well, that's a very general, fuzzy description of what we've done. In essence, what we have done is looked in all kinds of ways to save memory. And wherever possible, if we could disable a service that didn't make sense on TV and somehow it was still there, If we can lower the memory requirements for certain APKs, we did. So we ended up with significant RAM savings, which always go back to like the performance of devices, because RAM today is still the number one way you can improve performance on the device. In the mobile world, you typically have, what, 2-4 gigs of RAM? Well, for TV, you have what we're trying to get to very soon is 1 gig of RAM for HD devices and 1.5 gig of RAM for 4K devices. It's a huge difference. And we're always trying to push that limit lower, to the extent to which processes are like thrown away from memory and stuff. We're pushing the boundaries here really fast. Now, if we can save 100K, 200K, 300K, that's a huge win for us. And we keep pushing that boundary, and we did to a large extent in Android P. So that's one thing we did. But let's talk about things you can also see. We modified setup. Setup is a far more pleasant experience in Android P. It's a smoother experience with fewer intervals of time where you have to wait for something to be set up. So it's a very pleasant experience, and actually has a nice background. And I'll reserve the surprise for folks who are gonna get it to see this like movie playback in the background. It's a very living room experience, as opposed to I'll start my phone, you know, I'll just set up my language and do a few more things. We wanted to adapt setup for the living room experience, and I think we succeeded with that in Android P. We also refactored the entire code. It's easier for our OEMs to actually extend it where they need it.
When you say living room experience, I'm thinking it's a movie playback with like socks on the floor and things hanging from the
lights. I was thinking some of us have a TV in the bedroom.
I don't want your bedroom experience on his Android TV platform.
Right. Yes.
I'm He's speechless. All right.
Speechless, yes. The second thing we have done is we have improved settings. And in settings, we actually followed a little bit in the steps of mobile. So we have deferred settings. So things that you chose not to set up in while you went through your out-of-box experience are available for you and highlighted in settings, so you know to finish your setup. Some folks are very eager to get through that setup just by clicking next. No, I don't want to set up my account now. But they realize that it is as important for them to do so, so they can now do it in settings. So we also restructured the menu a little bit, simplified. It is key for TV to have more simple settings and not follow too closely the very complex tree structure of the settings application.
Don't you want the VCR UIs of the past that nobody could ever figure out, which is why everybody had the blinking midnight time on full time on their VCR?
Yeah, I don't think that I've seen an Android TV device with a clock on the front. Who knows? They're coming.
I did use to program my VCR for recording. I did that.
It's been a while, but it was a horrible experience. It's interesting because you're mentioning this stuff, and it seems like a lot of developers might think, well, you know, how important is the setup and the settings experience really? But like, for users to have to futz with that, especially as their first introduction to the device, like I like that the last couple of Google devices I got specifically, and this is true of many of the companies out there, they actually really thought about the onboarding experience. So I think the OnHub, the router experience, as well as the mesh routers, as well as the Google Home, like you just kind of plug them in and they require minimum input from me because there's so much that they can figure out on their own for default settings. And I think people started to realize that, you know, if you're going to freak people out with too many options when they first encounter the device, the chances are they're not even going to make it through the onboarding experience and they'll take it back, or, you know, they won't be using it the way that they should. So yeah, simplifying that, like it's a really hard job to make it look easy.
Yeah, and it's okay for users to skip certain steps. Of course, during the setup process, it is a time to explain to them why they should set it up. For example, why should you set up your assistant? Well, we should explain to them that it makes their life better going forward. Of course, they might be overwhelmed with the fact that they just pulled their TV out of the box and they just put it there in their living room and they just want to see if everything is okay, if it works. So yes, some people will skip certain steps.
And I think, at least on the Pixel, I remember that there were some stuff that they told me about the next day. You know, so you kind of got it set up in the next day, like, hey, you probably should also personalize assistant, you know, because they didn't bother with that during the setup, which was kind of nice that later on you could do more things.
You will get that, especially if you press the, if you have it on the remote and you press the assistant button, it will tell you, okay, you need to set it up now so I can do something for you. But also to build on what Gil said, actually, when you go through the setup, you can actually use it through the phone. So you can basically just say you want to log in through the phone, you enter a code, you click a button on your phone. And you're basically done. It'll get your Wi-Fi, your account information, download apps that are relevant to you. So we still do that. So it's a much nicer experience right now.
That's great. And you said there was a new there's a new launcher or some big changes to the launcher in Pico?
Well, I think what we did in O when we first launched the new home experience is that to make it not really attached to platform releases. So it's actually an unbundled app. So we actually can update it whenever we want, and we actually now just released the fifth version of it. So we started 1.0, now with 1.4. So we constantly improving the experience. We started with the basic, not so basic, but the new experience of actually putting the content up front, putting a recommendation, what we call channels, rows of recommendation from different apps on the main screen, and make sure that the user can customize the experience. So in the previous launcher, you just got a few rows of apps and that's about it. And that's what you can do. Now you can actually customize the whole UI. You can put your favorites up apps at the top. You can move the channels around. So if you're a big user of YouTube or play music or play movies or whatever, the accommodation can be on the top. We have the usual app view. You can customize it any way you want it also. Then we built on top of it, and the second step we did is actually help our OEMs customize it a little bit more, because for OEMs, it's really experience, out-of-the-box experience, really important, what apps they want to push to their customers, what they want to push in terms of their content. It's really, really important for them to monetize the system and to also give the experience they think are best for their users. So we build a whole way for them to customize what the out-of-box experience, what channels you will see, what apps will be on top. The user can still customize it later and the way they want it.
That's the part I was afraid of.
Yeah, the user at some point, what we said is it's important for the OEMs to show what they want, but the user owns the device. And after the out-of-box experience, the user can actually move everything around and set up the way they want and enjoy the experience that they want. So it's kind of a balance between these two things, the OEMs and then the user. So we do that. And we keep on improving. We keep on adding stuff. We saw, for instance, that one of the things that we saw is apps sometimes forget to update the content, or they remove the content and they you know, the backend server is dead, so they cannot update. So sometimes you see empty rows. So the next release you will see that empty rows will disappear after sometimes if the app doesn't update it, so you have a better experience. If you have a live TV app and you didn't connect the antenna to it, but you did later, it will pop up where it's supposed to be, where the OEM wanted it to be in the front, because it's important sometimes for legal matters to show it in a certain place. It will show up there. And we keep on improving the experience all the time, showcase specific content, to work with other app developers to make the experience a little bit better. And also what we're planning to do is actually improve the performance. As Gil said, performance is really important for us. So we have a huge work now on to actually profile every bit of the UI, kind of look at where we can improve it, where, like Tor said, maybe we don't need on certain devices to have all the animation as we want it to be, make it experience a little bit better on low-end devices. So we're looking at all these things and making sure the experience is really top-notch.
That sounds great.
Just to make it clear, we encourage our developers to use our lower-end devices for development. So we take a device...
Same is true with phones, actually. Yeah. Use the ones that your users may encounter, not the ones that you can, you know, afford.
Right. Not everybody does so.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody wants to see their masterpiece work on a really high-end piece of hardware. But we care about these low-end set-top box-like devices that would actually be used in very high numbers going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was maybe the most impressive thing about the Chromecast back in the day was that it was so cheap that just, you know, you could just easily pick up 2-3 and give to people.
Yeah.
So lots of people have it. I'm going to return to a question I asked earlier, but didn't finish, which is, what about carrier customization? You know, I know that for cell phones, there's a huge amount of variety in how much a manufacturer will change Android versus sort of the stock experience from the Android team. And Android Wear, there's a lot less of that. And I'm just wondering where Android TV falls on that spectrum.
Very complex question.
Partly addressed by what Isaac was just talking about, allowing OEMs to customize the look and feel of it, right?
So I have to be very careful here on wording because Tor asked me about operators. So I don't know if he meant truly like, you know, TV operators,
yeah,
or if he meant OEMs
of,
and...
I was thinking of the actual manufacturer of the device. If I were to go out today, I want to get an Android TV, a new one, because my old one, you know, doesn't work anymore. I probably, when I look at phones, I like the stock experience. So I tend to buy from, you know, cell phone manufacturers that are closer to the stock experience than far away from it. I would probably use the same... guide when buying an Android TV device. So I'm not asking you to name names, but I'm just wondering how much, like with Android Wear, I get the impression it doesn't really matter. It's mostly stock as far as I can tell. And so I'm just wondering if that's also true for Android TV or if really, I really want to play with the device first and get a sense of what the experience is.
The answer has, you know, has a fork in the row. Yes. We allow OEMs to customize the experience in setup, in the launcher, the way Isaac just described how to do. But that, and that works, by the way, really well for many OEMs. It works for Sony, right? It works for NVIDIA. There's no problem there. I should say that maybe some of them want even more customizations, and every year we're getting their requirements and we're enabling through new, in some cases, platform releases, and in some cases, just launcher releases, new features. That actually works fine. Now, it's a completely different answer if you're asking me about operators. Operators is a different class, and they want to take customization to the extreme. And by extreme, I mean they don't want the stock experience.
Right.
Now, let's just talk about launcher in that particular case, because we don't allow them today to say... replace the setup experience. We allow them to customize it in some way.
So I'm much less worried about the setup. I'm more thinking, for example, could someone go in and decide they want to put in their own assistant with their own voice recognition? You know,
good question. So what I was about to say is that operators can actually roll their own launchers.
I see.
Which is a very
different
class of devices. This is very different than, again, OTT manufacturers from smart TV manufacturers. We don't allow those OEMs, or maybe allow is a strong term, but we don't. They're not going to customize it. Although operators don't, like especially the large ones, don't envision launching a device that doesn't have their heavily customized branding and content the way they want in front of their users. And that's the big difference. So those folks go to a large extent to actually develop their own launchers.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that makes sense. Is that if I go to a cable operator and ask for their set-top box, it may be using Android TV, but it's really going to be sort of their set-top box tied to their channels and their branding. Whereas if I'm going to a store to buy a device, then it's going to maybe be closer.
Now, I should also say the smaller operators don't want to go through that trouble, either because maybe they don't have the resource development resources, or because they think, Isaac, I think you like this version better, that they like our launcher and they're happy with it, and the extent to which they can customize it is sufficient for their needs. Smaller operators tend to be in this category.
Okay.
I think also that if you talk with also bigger OEM, they're not in the business of building launchers or home screens. They're in the business of, you know, building TVs or ODT boxes. And our solution is pretty good for them. And so again, as the Gil said, they come from time to time. They want a little bit more customization. We go back and forth and we try to find what is the best solution for our users and for them. But basically, the solution that they see right now is a good solution. It put content front and center, so and they can actually customize the UI out of the box, so they can actually showcase their content on the front, and they're pretty happy with that.
Okay, I've been mostly asking questions as a user, you know, someone who likes to watch TV and use apps. But a number of our listeners are also Android app developers. Is there anything you want to?
Any listeners that aren't? I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure what they're doing listening to an Android development podcast.
I think it's important. We spend a lot of time educating developers how to use the platform. And I go to a lot of boot camps to work with app developers to actually show them how to use the APIs. We create new APIs for the new UI. And it's really a great experience to see how people are building the apps. And it's not really hard. We sit in boot camps, and one day you can build whatever you need for the new UI, just need to teach them and show them. There, I think we invest a lot of time in building support libraries and sample codes just to help our developers provide the best experience.
And is most of that service area, beyond the standard Android services, most of it is the Leanback library that you mentioned before, right?
The Leanback library is to build the app itself, but we also in order to showcase your content on the home UI, we have a provider that you need to populate with data. And there's things we do. I mean, we allow a user, let's say we have the plain next row, which user can actually put content in there. So we actually send some intents to the developer, to the app to say, okay, the user put some content in there, or the user played the content, or the user doesn't want to have this content on your row. So we send some information to the app using intents to tell the app, okay, here's a clue for you. The user didn't like this content, this recommendation. Just ask the UI to remove it. Maybe you should put something else instead in there, or just learn out of it what the user likes or doesn't like. So we have a set of APIs, some of it to the content provider, some of it is intents that we actually communicate with the app and tell it what to show and what's going on in the UI so the app can do a better job at providing content.
Okay, so that partially answers the question I was about to ask, which is, if you are an Android developer and you're used to writing phone applications and you're sort of TV curious, what are the kinds of things that they're going to need to learn or do to become a TV app? So obviously, you know, the provider and receiving these intents to display the right thing in the system UI, but what is it about Leanback that they need to understand in order to write a TV-friendly application?
So as Gil said, the whole layout of a TV app is a little bit different. Yeah. The content is presented a little bit differently. The form factor is bigger.
So you provide specialized layout managers?
There are layouts. There are all kinds of fragments that you can use. There we have a video fragment you can play the use to play the content. There are browse fragments to show rows of content. It's basically built on the recycler view and the grid layout. So it's pretty basic Android stuff, just a little bit more extended, a little bit more customized for Android TV. But basically, again, as Gil said, it's just Android development. Yep. There's tons of examples, guidelines. On GitHub, we put a whole sample, two sample apps that can actually run, compile, run, and see how it works with all types of content that you can show. Just look at it and just grab the thing that you think will work best for you and just use it.
Have you tried playing with the new architecture components and seeing how those interact with Leanback? I'm thinking of, you know, using like the new navigation component for navigating between the fragments and things.
So
like that.
Not in the current launcher, but we do some experimental on other UIs that we're experimenting with. So we are starting to experiment with that. It's still in basic stages, but so I cannot tell if it's right. Working or not. But we are, yeah. We have a few engineers who really like to try the new hot thing, so they try to everything.
Great. All right. Why did we not ask?
Oh, we didn't ask about... So one of the questions that certainly came up a couple of years ago a lot, maybe it's already been, you know, put away, is So Google offers this thing called this Cast device, whatever you're going to call it, and we also offer Android TV, and they seem to have a pretty heavy overlap. How do you distinguish between them? Like, what is one versus the other?
I would say that they have different usage model. They just address the different needs. Android TV optimizes the experience based on lean back, relax on the couch type of with a remote in your hand. You don't even look at your remote. You control your TV that way. And whereas Cast, the Cast product, is designed for a second screen experience. In other words, you pull up your phone, you're still on the couch, but you're very engaged with your phone. You are signed in your phone. You find the content that you want to watch. You select it, and now, bam, it's on your device. Now, I want to say, for those of you who don't know, that the Cast protocol is also supported in Android TV. In other words, if you have an Android TV, you can actually connect to it as you would connect to a Cast device, and you can still use that functionality. The answer to your question really is, it depends on which model you enjoy the best and which one is practical. For example, what if you have guests coming to your house and they say, hey, let's watch a movie together. You know, I have the movie right here. I'm signed in with my account and I'd like to watch it on your TV. Say, sure. So Cast is the right solution for that particular usage model. Whereas if you're there with your family, if you want to just browse in front of everyone, you know, through some options and look at some reviews of some movies and decide which one you want to watch for the evening, we think that the TV interaction, so just a remote control in your hand and a large TV is a better experience.
Okay. Maybe it's also about which devices you lose in your life. If you constantly lose your phone, it's probably handy to have Android TV with a remote. On the other hand, if you constantly lose the remote, maybe you can find your phone instead and you can use Cast. So you probably need both. I think that's what I heard.
Maybe if Cast folks would be here, they would tell you that if you're signing in, they're going to keep all your history on servers and you don't need to worry too much about losing your phone. But, you know, the same way that if you exchange your TV or your OTT box, as long as you sign in with the same account, you should get back in terms of purchases and everything else that's related to your account back when you get to sign in on your device. But you asked me, what is it? Hey, you didn't ask. And so you didn't ask me what exciting new devices is Google bringing out this year that run Android TV.
I have a question.
Yes.
What exciting new devices is Google bringing to the market?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So at Google I.O., we actually...
I was sure you were going to say, we don't talk about future developments.
Yes, that would be a good burn.
Well, I thought I'll excite your users a little bit with the interesting things that I think I'm going to say. So first of all, at Google I.O., we announced... that in collaboration with JBL, we're building a soundbar. Now, this is a very exciting form factor. It's very different. It's a little bit different than all the other ones out there. It's more in the OTT category. But what is interesting about it is that it has HDMI inputs. It obviously, it still connects to your TV with an HDMI cable. It has, obviously, JBL quality speakers, so it's a really nice soundbar. You can actually use it just as a speaker when the TV is off. You can actually stream through Bluetooth audio from your phone to this particular device. Of course, it still has a remote. What's also exciting about it, and this is, I think, an almost first, is that this device will actually have far-field microphones in them. So you no longer necessarily need to use your remote control to use Assistant on this device. Rather, it has the two mics on the device, and you can actually interact with the device by using those mics. So you can walk into your room. You don't need to pick up the remote and say, you know, turn on my TV and say, okay, Google.
Okay, so you use the hot word.
You can use the hot word. Yeah, I mean, you have to use the hot word. And so... this is a first for a Google product, so we're looking forward to this kind of interactions. For example, one of the cool things you can do with it is you can switch inputs using your voice. So let's say you have a PlayStation and it's labeled as such through HDMI CEC. You can just say, switch to my PlayStation, and it will just magically switch to it. And by the way, the assistant overlay will still be on it. So really cool stuff. And it's really a new form factor. We're breaking ground here. It's a little bit more than just a simple OTT box.
It sounds, from my naive ideas, like a combination of Google Home and an OTT box. Right. So, I mean, it's the same sort of, you speak to the room and then the device does the thing, but it's also integrated with your TV directly with the content.
And you can use that as the hub. What's very important that it has its own HDMI inputs.
Yeah.
So you don't need to route your HDMI inputs directly into your TV.
Yeah.
Now you can put them through the soundbar and control it with the assistant.
Yeah.
The other device that I would like to talk about is the one we gave developers at Google I.O. We affectionately call this ADT2 because ADT1 was, 4 years ago? It's been a while.
Something like that, yeah.
And this is a device that we will distribute to developers. We asked developers to sign up. Interest was extremely high. What this is a, call it an HDMI stick, because I think everybody can understand actually that concept. Looks very much like, let me pretend I'm thinking a little bit here, Chromecast device. It actually has that small form factor and runs Android TV. And this is the device that will run Android P. We will offer a pre-release for Android for the upcoming release running on this particular device. We did not yet announce the time when the hardware and obviously the software will be available. But stay tuned, we're going to make that announcement soon. And I want to underscore that this is, for now, just a developer device.
All right.
That's exciting.
I think developers would be excited by that. It feels more exclusive that way. Yeah.
That's right.
And that's what the show is all about, just keeping Tor excited.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Didn't you have, feature requests? I mean, you wanted them to go back to analog so that you could channel switch.
Well, no, I think I had feature requests. I want fast channel switching. I want really good. I want Android TV to be really good at TV. And what I heard today is that it is. I just didn't have the right device. I need to get an antenna. I need to look into what are these the cloud providers are for getting TV. I'm hoping you are working with operators who will, do an even better job than they do today with their DVRs.
All right.
That's really.
All right. I think that's it then. Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.